They would travel south, much farther south than was their custom at that time. You see, the past winter season had been a hard one. Fresh game was scarce, so new hunting grounds must be explored. So, the Meskaki Braves journeyed down through the cold forests of their homeland, down into the prairie land, the domain of the Kickapoos. The Braves moved stealthily through the brush and bramble, past the clear streams where crawfish played, and on into the marshes where the wild onion grew. But then suddenly one of the Braves stopped in his tracks. Gesturing with the point of his longbow, he silently apprised the others that he had heard a sound coming from beyond that cluster of foliage. A bear, perhaps? The Braves cautiously advanced, and again a noise, a rustling in the vine-strangled thicket. But then at once a strange creature burst from the underbrush. It was great in size, almost as large as a Meskaki Brave. Covered with black and white fur, it ran on all fours, and it was heading deeper into the marsh. The Braves pursued their quarry like the wind itself, deeper, deeper into the muddy prairie. An arrow flew and found its mark. The creature stumbled and fell. And when the Braves rejoined at the site, their mouths were open in awe. They had killed a giant skunk. Now, in the hand-me-down lore of the Meskaki, the size of the skunk may have been enhanced over the generations it was retold. But in spirit, the skunk would have his revenge. Because forever after, in the land of his slaying, his scent would remain. And even still, that soggy prairie land is called the place of the skunk. As for the warlike Meskaki tribe, their roots reach deep into American history. Misnamed Fox Indians by the early French explorers, their true name, Meskaki, comes from Meshwakuhug, which means the Red Earth People. At one time, the Meskaki were kings of all they surveyed, though today their numbers have diminished to 550. The story you heard a moment ago, the legend of the Great Skunk, is but a page from Meskaki Indian lore. That it was often repeated by Kickapoo and Sauk tribes people is little wonder. They all spoke the language of their parent nation, the Algonquin. Similarly, tribes for hundreds of miles around knew where to find the place of the skunk. It was the territory of terrible odor, the land of the bad smell, a reputation reinforced by the stinkweed and wild onion and wild garlic which grew there in abundance. And as I say, even today, we call that legendary prairie the place of the skunk, though it is a prairie no longer. Because the site at which Meskaki hunters were said to have killed a giant skunk, the marshland which, according to lore, was doomed to stink forevermore. You know by its ancient name, place of the skunk, in the Meskaki Indian dialect, of course, Chicago. Only now you know the rest of the story.
Protecting what matters on The Right Choice, AM 1230, KPRL 99.3 FM with Barry Fisher. Advice and information on protecting what matters most in today's world. Brought to you by Adler Belmont Insurance Brokers and their new associate, Heather Bordan, serving the commercial insurance needs of businesses on the Central Coast.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. PWM is the broadcast that helps you become better shoppers and buyers of services and products to protect various aspects of your life, health, and property. We also explore current events, our history, community, institutions, and local treasures that are notable and worth preserving. This hour's guest is Jenny Grinninger, trustee of the Templeton Unified School District. We're going to talk about why and how cell phone regulations in our public schools are good for our kids, educational proficiency in our schools, and social-emotional learning and other bad ideas that hurt our schools and students. Jenny, welcome to PWM.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
I'm happy to have you here, too. Call in with questions or comments, folks. 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So, Jenny, talk a bit about your background as a marriage and family counselor and how it informs your thinking as a Templeton USD trustee.
Yeah, so I got my degree in 93 and went through my internship and got my license, and I practiced as a marriage and family therapist for a number of years before I switched careers, and I'm a realtor now. But I still keep up on my education, and I maintain my license. And I knew when COVID happened that we were going to have a lot of issues with kids, that this was a disaster, really, for families. Knowing, I used to work also at the Department of Social Services, so I knew the struggles that families go through. And what we're seeing now with we already had an increase in mental health, but this exacerbated it so much. And it's creating quite a problem for everybody. Teachers, families, our school system is suffering in a big way.
Yeah, absolutely. And all over the country.
Really. Yes.
Absolutely. We're going to get into that. You know, when you came into the studio, you heard Susan Shelley talking about Proposition 2. And tell us, and you had some comments about that, because we already have the matching funds kind of stuff in place, you said.
Correct. So when a school bond, that's one of the selling points that is given to us, is that, you know, we put a school bond measure in place, and if it gets voted for, that the benefit then is that the state matches those funds. And so it kind of doubles our money. But so I'm not sure why this proposition is even needed. That's already in place. And I'd be interested in hearing more about that. What's the difference between what's already happening and what this new measure would do?
That's interesting. And you know, you were saying that the whole bond and matching funds and the whole process is so complex that you have to hire consultants to really run it for the school districts.
That's what we're told by our district as a school board trustee, because I did ask that question. The consultant firm that we hire does all of the surveys to see, you know, is this going to be something that we can be successful in getting passed in our community? Once we do get it passed, they do all the reporting to the state. They do a lot of work up front, selling it to the community, meeting with the community and talking to them about why the bond is necessary and what it's going to be used for. And so, I asked, you know, why can't we do this work ourselves? Why do we need to pay all this money to a consulting firm? And I was told the state has put so much in place in terms of what reports have to be done all along the way that it's so onerous that we don't have the expertise within the district, really any district, to be able to do that and keep up with it. And there's penalties if you don't do it correctly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So again, this is just another way to feed the consultancy industrial complex, and we're going to talk. We have a lot of industrial complexes in this country today.
Yes, we do.
All right, so let's turn to the cell phone limitations. I mean, these are getting traction in California. You know, even the LAUSD system is getting on board with this, and with some interesting comments. But you know, we talked about this when you were here back in May. You know, it all kind of got started a bit with this Jonathan Haidt's book about how smartphones and the apps are really hurting our kids' mental health. And all of a sudden, it seems to have flipped. Everybody's on it now. Even Governor Newsom signed a bill from the state of at the state level to get all the districts to put these restrictions, limitations on cell phones around the state, which makes me a little nervous about that too, but we'll talk about that. So tell us, give us your impression of this whole thing, and why has it flipped so quickly?
I'm not sure. I mean, I brought it up to our board before I knew that this was even a topic in other districts, or that this was something that was on the governor's wish list. And I knew just from my background what social media and cell phones and blue lights and all of that is doing to our kids' brains, and that reducing their time on a screen is key. And what I didn't know when I brought it up was that we already had a board policy in place restricting cell phones that we were not enforcing, and hardly anybody knew it existed. And so it was put in place in 2020. And essentially says that cell phones are to be off and away for the entire school day, which is really what I wanted. And when we first started discussing it, the rest of the board didn't realize we had that policy already either. And they were very hesitant to put, especially at the high school level, they were expecting that there would be a lot of backlash and from both parents and from students and even teachers. And they were hesitant, you know, and wanted to do a lot of research. And the more that we started looking into it, and of course, then we started hearing LA Unified was doing it and all these other school districts were doing it. And teachers were coming and talking to us and saying, yes, we really want this. We need help because we were aware the policy was in place, but we had no support in enforcing it. And it just became another battle to have with the kids. And so we still are looking at how exactly we're going to implement it, what kinds of progressive discipline might we put in place there. And so it's still a work in progress. But I'm encouraged because already at our middle school, we're getting reports on day one that they really enforced it pretty heavily. And kids' faces were up. They were smiling at each other, engaging with each other. They were engaging more in class. There was a feeling around campus of just better attitudes. And they saw that so immediately. And I knew that they would. This was why I pushed for it. And I'm so pleased to know that.
Yeah. And, you know, and again, it does make me suspicious as to why all of a sudden Newsom is on board with this. I mean, and even the New York Times ran an article. It was last week in the New York Times from, again, it was an opinion piece from Jonathan Haidt talking about basically that even the Gen Zers, they're like kind of liking this whole thing.
That's right. If you look at any surveys that are done with students who are already experiencing cell phone bans in their school, they'll all tell you initially they were against it. They were really upset about it. But now that they're experiencing it, they're like, wow, what a difference this is making in my life. I feel better. Even I had a high school student at our own school say, I forget to put my phone on and take it out of my backpack when I get home. So I just am using it even less. Mm-hmm. And so it is an addiction. Yes. And Jonathan Haidt was at the forefront of all of this. I mean, he started collecting data and doing these reports 8 years ago. And so he, you know, he's referenced in a lot of articles and a lot of books that other people write. And the current bill that the governor put forward is AB 3216. It was passed by the legislature in August, and he just signed it into law yesterday. So we were expecting that. My issue with that is that more and more the state of California is taking away local control. And we always have to be wary of, even when it's something we want and we think is a good idea, you should be allowing the local elected officials to deal with that. And you don't need to be placing these mandates and laws in place that are requiring things that maybe they would be doing on their own and we already were anyway. But it just puts it's unconstitutional when you're taking away local control.
Yeah, and we're going to talk some more about that towards the end of the show, because you have a laundry list of things that the state is trying to do top-down stuff.
That's right.
So, I mean, what are you doing at Templeton, USD, to track the results of the ban? I mean, you're kind of a microcosm, really, of other, you know, because you're smaller. So what are you guys putting in place to watch what's happened and evaluate everything?
I don't know that we have anything formally put in place. We're just having principals and teachers reporting to us how successful it's going. When I pick up my own son at school, I'm watching to see, I'm seeing all the phones coming out of the backpack. The bell is ringing and it's, you know, immediately I'm seeing them pulled out, which is an indication to me that they didn't have it out. Mm-hmm. And I would say maybe half the kids at the junior high I'm seeing have a phone. It's not as widespread. My son tells me everybody has one.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I find personally, and again, I'm an older guy, obviously, but I mean, I find just I can only do so much of the social media stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just seems so, most of it, it seems really trite and, what's the word I'm looking for? Everybody's looking at themselves, right? And that's what Haidt talks about in his book, you know, that the kids, instead of looking at their fellow students and the teachers, they're doing is looking at themselves.
That's right.
And it plays into all the social learning stuff that we're going to talk about here in a little while. But yeah, I put it away. I'm sure it's really detrimental to the kids. So.
Yeah, it is on a lot of different levels, not just with mental health issues, but with their ability to connect with each other, eye contact, all of these things that create synapses in our brain that is healthy, it's removing those.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's rewiring brains.
Well, and I'd be interested to see, and this will be our next topic here, is this going to improve academic proficiency?
Absolutely, yeah. It will.
Yes.
100%. It yeah. will, because if you are having a cell phone even in your pocket and it's on, which mm-hmm. is why we said off, not muted, mm-hmm. off, because when you get a notification, it still buzzes, and
right.
you feel that buzz. It's like a dopamine hit, and you even if you're not pulling it out to look, your focus now goes to, oh my gosh, what did I get a notification about? I can't wait to see it. And kids get up and leave to go I have to go to the bathroom, so they can check their phone. Whereas if it's off, they're not even getting that notification.
Mm. Yeah. All right. So a couple of weeks ago, Kenny Enney called in. He's obviously, everybody knows he's a member of the Paso School District board trustee, and he called in to highlight their district's dismal math and other skills proficiency.
Mm-hmm.
Even left-wing news outlets are starting to notice this. Vox, there was an article on Vox, American kids have fallen far behind in math and reading. Gosh, they're just noticing this, obviously. So what are you finding in the Templeton School District, and you know, how you compare against the rest of the state, and so on and so forth?
We're doing a little bit better test-wise with our scores than Paso is. Mm-hmm. So overall, our district, this is all of our school sites, 54.5% of our student population is meeting the standard or exceeding the standard in English. And that's down 0.33% from the previous year. So it wasn't going in the right direction. This is last year's test scores. I haven't seen this year's yet. And the math standard, we have 40.76% who are meeting or exceeding the standard, and that's up from the previous year by 1.04%. And what I always like to do, too, we can look at that by grade level. So 11th grade is right before, you know, their last year of school. By 11th grade, they should definitely be ready for graduation. And our 11th grade high school at Templeton High School, 57.89% are meeting standards in English and 32.55% in math.
Hmm.
So it's definitely concerning. Even the 57%, I mean, if we got a cancer diagnosis and the doctor said you have a 57% chance of beating this, that'd feel not so great. We want to see somewhere around 80 to 90%.
And these kids get graduated regardless of whether they pass the tests.
Yeah, and I can't remember off the top of my head what our graduation rate is, but it's somewhere around 97%.
So are we passing off the teaching to the junior colleges and universities and tutoring and all that kind of stuff?
Not exactly, because at our junior college, and we had I spoke with some professors from Allen Hancock College a year ago or so, and they had mentioned to me that there was a law recently passed in California, and I don't know what it was, but it prevents the junior colleges from testing students in math to place them where they are testing at. And instead, it allows them to self-select. And they're saying, we're seeing students that don't even know how to figure out the circumference of a circle. That's pretty common in junior high, or in not junior high, but in junior college.
Junior college, yeah.
And so they're not proficient, they're not testing, and so the professors at the junior colleges are having a really hard time with all of that.
And in the meantime, the universities, colleges and universities are getting rid of the SATs and the ACTs. They're not, and
right.
So are they just, how are they making it, how are colleges making a decision that they're going to admit anybody? I mean, what are they basing it on?
Some of them are still using SAT scores.
Mm-hmm.
They are going back to that. They stopped doing it during COVID because nobody could go and do any testing in person.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they are moving back to that. There may be some universities that are doing away with it, but I think those are few and far between at this point. They're looking a lot more at their grades, but their grades are based upon, you know, I wonder about our testing even.
Mm-hmm.
What are we really testing, and how do
right.
we know that our testing is testing their knowledge and not just their ability to take a test?
Yep. in the last 2 minutes in this segment, this is you turned me on to this podcast called How Teaching Kids to Read Went Wrong. And, it, and it's a series of podcasts, really.
Yeah.
And it highlights the school book publisher's industrial complex.
Yes.
Talk a little bit about that before we go into break.
Sure. Yeah. The podcast is called Sold a Story. And it's, I can't remember how many different sessions it is, maybe 10. And they're all short, like somewhere between 15 to 30 minutes each. Mm-hmm. And I never realized how political curriculum was. And apparently it is. And it's been that way for decades and decades. And reading, when I went to school, used to be phonics. We all learned how to sound it out. You could pick up any book and see a word that you've never seen before and figure out how to pronounce it, and then look up in the dictionary, what does that word mean if you don't know it? And now instead, what they're teaching is, particularly, of course, in the younger grades where you have pictures in your books, if you can't figure out the word, look at the picture and see if you can guess. And in Templeton, we say, I spy with my little eagle eye. And kids are, you know, when you get older and you don't have pictures in the book, how are you going to implement that? We have kids that are not able to read clearly when we look at our test scores. So we know it's an issue, and we've started getting back to phonics. Right now, we're doing kind of a hybrid where we're doing both that and the phonics, which if you listen to Sold a Story says, don't do that. You need to do phonics and only phonics. And it was working before. Why we quit using it and had to be sold this new curriculum just to line a publisher's pockets, it's disgusting.
Yeah. I mean, and yeah, so this is just, I mean, I hate to even say this, but it's like we're just passing these kids through school and I mean, and it's not their fault, but they're illiterate. Or they can't function at a basic level, and this, and with all the money that we're spending on schools in this in the country and state in particular, it's really criminal. So, anyway, we're up against a break. We'll be back with social emotional learning, another hot topic for Barry and Jenny. So, stand by.
Ace Auto Care in Atascadero, the best price and service on brakes, tires, smog checks, oil changes, and more. Ace Auto Care, all your vehicle needs, everything you want.
Fox News, I'm Tom Graham. The ramped up violence between Israel and the Lebanese militant group of Hezbollah is threatening to turn into a full-blown war, while President Biden continues to call for a ceasefire in the ongoing conflict in Gaza.
And secure security for Israel and Gaza free of Hamas grip.
Mr. Biden speaking before the UN General Assembly today for his final address as president. Former President Trump campaigning in battleground Georgia, telling supporters he'd offer tax breaks for manufacturers, including foreign companies that come to the U.S.
The centerpiece of my plan is for a manufacturing renaissance, which will be a 15% Made in America tax rate.
The Real Clear Politics polling average gives Trump the edge in Georgia, but does show him trailing Vice President Harris nationally by more than 2 points. America is listening to Fox News.
Garage door jamming? Time to call Hammond.
Hammond Overhead Door Company, serving the Central Coast for over 50 years with all your garage door needs, residential or commercial. Hammond has the right door system for any application. As a local, family-owned company, Hammond Overhead Door Company is committed to providing the superior products you want and the personal service you deserve. Call 238-0524 or go to HammondOverheadDoor.com.
Garage door jamming? Time to call Hammond.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Jenny Grinninger, trustee of the Templeton Unified School District. Call in with questions or comments, 805-238-5775, 238-KPRL. So, Jenny, a couple things before we go move into social-emotional learning. You mentioned during the break that you had a whole bunch of other stuff you could have mentioned. Any hot topics that you want to circle back to before we move on?
Well, why is the education failing in our schools? What happened and how long has it been happening? And really, I think it's been happening. We've seen declining test scores for quite a long time. It wasn't just COVID. Common Core was put in place as a way for nationwide for the school systems to all be uniform and be teaching in the same manner so that we could better see what was working and when the testing, Hello? When you tested kids, then it would be the same.
The radio,
all right. Stand by. Let Jenny finish your comment, and then we'll bring you in for your question, okay?
And so What we're doing is, besides this Common Core, which a lot of states have done away with at this point, quite a few states have decided this isn't working and they've abandoned it, but California is not. It also hamstrings our teachers. You know, we have all these teachers who are very, very qualified, and they know individually their students, what they need and how to work with them to help them learn. And they can't do that. They don't have the time with everything that we're putting into place. And we're missing out on all of that education that they received.
Yep. Thanks for calling Protecting What Matters. What's your question?
Hi, it's regarding social and emotional learning. I wanted to know from the speaker what research they've read about social and emotional learning from either the collaborative or the association in academic social emotional learning, CASEL.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with CASEL because that's not the program we use in Templeton, but I hear from a lot of other moms across the nation in their districts that are using it, and it's not preferred. In Templeton, we use multi-tiered systems of support. It's MTSS and PBIS, which I can't recall what that stands for, but really what we're trying to do, it's not a class that kids take, you know, which people say it's not a class, it's not being taught. It's more of an overall system that's intertwined throughout the day and all in their classes. And each district is doing it a little differently. Some districts just have posters on the walls that are trying to teach kids how to be better citizens, which is great. You know, you need to be kind to your fellow students, treat people with respect, and the golden rule, you know, should be forefront in our mind. That's all fine. But when it starts to get into an issue is when, for instance, we do this in Templeton. We have morning meetings before class starts, especially in the lower grades. And they have kind of a circle time, and it's an invitation to come and share with your classmates, you know, how your morning was, you know, what kinds of things maybe upset you this morning or what's going on at home that you're trying to deal with, so we can get it out of the way and move on with our day now and get down to learning. But what that does in that forum is you're put in a social situation with your classmates where there's social pressure to share, and kids often overshare, and they may be sharing things that may be best left private or with a trusted adult, or maybe things that their family really doesn't want them talking about that's really sensitive. And now that's another topic that child can get bullied over. And so kids don't understand all of that. It's they may feel in the moment that it was okay, and then later they regret it. They don't know how to deal with those feelings. And just even being in a situation where, you know, school's not supposed to be therapy. We're not doing group therapy at school. We shouldn't be. We're doing education. And so I have an issue with us doing those things.
Thanks for your call. So let's back up for a second. So what is social emotional learning?
Mm-hmm.
You know, where did it come from? How long has this been infiltrating our school systems? You know, and again, being an old guy, it just seems like a lot of navel gazing to me that's going on, when the kids should be out there in the yard playing with each other and interfacing with each other and being kids. So
yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's been around for quite a while, longer than what we all realize. I think it's probably somewhere around a decade. It's become much more in the forefront. And it really has developed because we are seeing such a huge increase. Even before COVID, I said it was a 600% increase in depression and anxiety amongst young people across our nation, even before COVID. So we know that totally skyrocketed. Suicidality is up. All of the concerning things that we would be really worried about for kids, they're not healthy mentally. And so this is an effort to try to help that and to deal with it. But in the meantime, we also put a lot of things in place that are working against us, like, in my opinion, and understand these are my opinions, not the opinion of the board. Restorative justice is another, it's part of social emotional learning. And it's the idea that, you know, rather than punish children, we need to do positive feedback with them, and we need to help them to understand why they're having the behavior. And that may work with really young kids before the behavior gets out of hand. But as we move along, as they get older and they definitely know right from wrong, and we're still doing that, and we're allowing them to get away with the things that they're doing more and more and more, it becomes problematic, and it starts getting then, you know, progressing into criminal behavior. And that's a big concern. We need to have some progressive discipline in place. And in some instances we do, but I think that we need to be more, you know, kids need boundaries. They thrive in a place of structure and boundaries and knowing, if I do this, this is going to be the consequence.
So this is all, I mean, in many regards, it's part of this whole CRT thing, critical race theory. I mean, with restorative justice, it's all tied into the same Marxist tropes.
Yes.
So again, how it's obviously being used differently in every school district. It sounds like Templeton is trying to moderate it a little bit, but it's, what are you seeing out there? And also, I was going to mention, I mean, it seems to kind of like coincide with the advent of cell phones and apps, basically.
Yeah, and that was one of the reasons I had also brought up, let's, you know, start looking at restricting cell phones, because that's free. We can do that, and that's free, and it's going to have a massive impact in a positive way. And so I think we're already seeing that, and why it wasn't done sooner is sad to me. I think that it's been a problem for a long time. And you can, even as an adult, you can feel it. You start scrolling through social media on your phone, and before you know it, an hour's gone by, and you're like, oh my gosh, how did that happen?
Right.
So the addictive quality is there, and the platforms know it.
Mm-hmm. And again, going back to the whole restorative justice thing, I mean, the basic theory here is that if you're at a victim, if you're an aggrieved minority, you get special treatment. And if you're not an aggrieved minority, meaning a white person,
yes,
you get lousy treatment.
Well, if you remember the shooting that happened in Parkland in Florida,
mm-hmm.
that was one of the things they found with that shooter, is that he had been, he had a lot of behavioral issues, and there had been lots of opportunities where they could have done something more than restorative justice, and they didn't. And in that case, and I'm not saying that we have that here, because I'm not aware of it here in Templeton at all, but in that case, the school district was monetarily subsidized for having less suspensions and less expulsions. So if they had less incidences that they were reporting to law enforcement, then they got more money in their district. And so there was an incentive there to not do that. And that's part of the issue.
So one of the things we talked about back in May, and again, this was brought to the attention of a lot of people with Abigail Shire's book, Bad Therapy: Why Kids Aren't Growing Up. And I know you've brought the book with you to kind of share some of her insights. And you know, there's a great, I'm just going to tell the audience while Jenny looks up what she wants to share here, is that Abigail Shire did a great interview with Ben Shapiro, and it's on YouTube. And all you have to do is say Ben Shapiro, Abigail Shire, and you'll get the picture really quickly. It's worthwhile watching. But anyway, what were you gonna? Where were you going
well,
down?
The excerpt I had set out here to read is more about cell phones, but mm-hmm. part of what I've read in her book, the gist of it is that she's talking about that we have too many kids in therapy today, mm-hmm. that this is such a focus that, you know, it's kind of like when you question a child and you say to them, you don't feel very good now, do you? Of course, you know, they're going to agree with you. Kids are agreeable. And so we're constantly putting them in this place where they're always examining their feelings, and they're not just being kids and playing. We need to, what would be better is if we had more lunchtime and recess time and playtime to help them get out that energy, instead of putting them in this box where they have to sit in a seat and be dutiful for the whole school day. That's not normal kid behavior. Mm-hmm. And we've tried to squish them into this box where they're not able to be a kid.
Especially for boys.
Especially for boys, yes.
Yeah, I was reading, I don't know whether it was Schreier or Haidt, but he talks about how, you know, after the article talked about how after they, even though they think that girls have a tougher time with depression, when they levelized the data, boys were pretty much right up there with the same level of depression. They were just presenting differently with it.
Right.
Can you touch on that a bit?
Yeah. Boys tend to present depression more as anger.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, a lot of the behavior issues probably we're seeing has to do, and anxiety too, has to do with that. That's how they present when they're feeling anxious or depressed. And we don't always see it that way. You know, you see a kid that's behaving angrily, you think that's a bad kid. Mm-hmm. And then they grow up with that label, and it just affects them really deeply. And so I think that what Abigail Schreier is talking about in this book is certainly there are some kids that do need therapy, but when we have so many kids that are all doing therapy, and especially if they're on medications for depression and anxiety, it's not healthy. We need to find other avenues to help children. And one of her suggestions is the parents being in therapy so they can learn how to help their child, rather than the child being in therapy.
What are you seeing with these kids being medicalized and being on medications? I mean, is that continuing to increase, or what do you see in here?
I don't have any data in front of me that I've looked at to know that for sure, but mm-hmm. just from my background, I know that in general, those medications don't always fix the problem. Sometimes they exacerbate it. You know, we've all heard about the person that was on antidepressants and killed themselves because it got worse. So it's difficult for children to verbalize always what it is that they're feeling and knowing whether or not something's working for them. And so I'm not saying don't ever put your children on medication. That's not the answer either, but it shouldn't be our first go-to for every child.
Right, right. So how much of this... this is a question that we talked about, but I didn't put it on our question list. How much of this is tied up with the whole gender identity thing that's going on in the schools and this drive to, again, I mean, sexualize kids, you know, let them make these decisions on their own without their parents being involved in it? What do you see in here? I mean, again, and you don't have to be, I'm not specific to Templeton necessarily, but I mean, what's right. your view on this?
Well, we certainly are presenting kids, even in schools, with our sex ed curriculum that the state requires. They're being presented with information that's way more than what they need to know. It is providing them with information that is difficult for them to process in their brain. If we had kept it to biology and how to protect yourself and, you know, some sexually transmitted diseases you can get, how to prevent pregnancy, those kinds of things would have been fine. But it's going way beyond that now. And it's too much for mm-hmm. kids' brains to process. And it is preparing them for sexual deviancy, in my estimation. And I think that when we talk about kids, more and more kids that we're seeing that are turning towards the LGBTQ community, this is part of it. It's also coming from social media. It's in our cartoons. It's in everything that is presented to our children on a regular basis. It's so hard to avoid. And it's being normalized to them that, you know, if you're uncomfortable in your body, that must mean that you were born wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's such a dangerous message to give to children. To me, that's body shaming. why would we not say instead, it's normal to be uncomfortable in your body during puberty. Most of us go through that, and it's okay. It'll get better. These are the feelings you're going to have. This is normal, and it'll all even out as you get a little bit older.
Mm-hmm. How much of this is being driven by the mental health and the medical industrial complex?
Oh, huge. They get a lot of money from our kids being medicalized in this way, a huge amount. And if you follow that money, it's very plain to see. And they're creating lifelong medical patients. The issues that happen with these kids that are receiving hormone blockers and having sex change operations, mastectomies, penile implants, they've not had puberty yet. So their body's not even fully developed. And it doesn't put a pause on it like they're being told. It prevents them from going through puberty, and they may not recover from that. If they decide later that they want to stop that medication, it's not going to just resume for them.
Well, and there's actually been stories about major medical centers around the country. I think one of them, some southern states I want to say, that are basically setting up these sex change, gender reassignment, I guess would be the term, clinics, is a profit center for the medical centers.
Yeah.
I mean, it's clearly wrong. I don't know how it's going to be dealt with at this point, but yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. Children that are teens now that maybe are now young adults that have gone through some of these operations are talking about having problems with osteoporosis, having problems with their heart, having sexual malfunctions. You know, they're not able to have sex in a normal way. They're not receiving sexual pleasure. These are the things that help us connect with our partner. Mm-hmm. And it's a devastating impact on them.
Yes, absolutely. In the last couple of minutes here, and we might, roll this into the next segment a little bit. I know you're very active with Moms for Liberty. You just got back from a national convention. Yeah. You had a great speaker the other night here in Templeton. And so tell us a little bit about that, and with an eye towards talking about how's Moms for Liberty helping parents and kids?
Yeah. So Moms for Liberty is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization. And, people always say, every article you read says we're a conservative, far-right group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I would agree with the word conservative, because that doesn't equal Republican. There is a lot of Democrats who have conservative values. And 40% of our membership is Democrats and independents. So when they say that we're far right, that's false. Mm-hmm. How are we helping? So we're helping to educate and unify and empower parents to understand what it is that's happening in their children's school and what they can do about it, how to speak publicly at a school board meeting or at their state legislature. We have been in existence for just 3.5 years. And in that period of time, we have gotten 42 pieces of legislation passed in various states that have to deal with parental rights or education. And that's a lot.
Yeah.
That's more than a lot of groups get done in that short period of time. So we are making a huge impact. And we have gotten, I think it's 365 school board members placed on school board trustee districts. And so that's also huge, because a lot of times parents don't have a voice on the school board. It's the teachers union that has had that. And our opponents will say, why are you seeking to overtake these boards? It's like, we're not seeking to overtake them. We're seeking to have a seat.
Right.
And so the teachers union has had that place for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And we're wanting to have a place there with them.
Great. Well, when we come back, I want you to tell people how they can get involved in the local chapter, and then we'll hit some last few questions before the top of the hour. So stand by, folks. We will be right back.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL is brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
I'm Liz Klayman, and this is the Fox Business Report.
Stocks ending higher with both the Dow and S&P 500 notching new record closes. The major averages advance following a move by China to boost the world's second largest economy with fresh stimulus measures, which lifted indexes in Asia, European luxury stocks, U.S. listed shares of Chinese companies like Alibaba, and U.S. companies that have exposure in China. And Visa stock tumbling 5%. The Justice Department filing an antitrust lawsuit against the credit card giant, accusing Visa of using its size and dominance to illegally monopolize the U.S. debit card market, costing consumers and businesses billions of dollars. The Dow winners, Caterpillar, Home Depot, and Salesforce. The Dow decliners, Visa, Microsoft, and Amgen. The Dow up 84 points, the Nasdaq up 100, S&P 500 higher by 14. That's your Fox Business Report. I'm Hillary Barsky, invested in you.
Need life insurance but have diabetes, high blood pressure, or on anxiety meds? If you're a 50-year-old male, even porky, or with type 2 diabetes, $1 million of life insurance may only cost you about $200 a month. For affordable term life insurance, call Term Provider and speak with Big Lou at 800-444-2013, 800-444-2013, or visit BigLou.com. Remember, Big Lou's like you. He's on meds, too. 800-444-2013.
This Fox Business News update on KPRL brought to you by Stifel, your full-service wealth management firm since 1890. Stifel, located at 1337 Vine Street in Paso Robles. Call 805-238-3080. Stifel, 238-3080.
Driven to be the best.
The veteran-owned Ted Miles Motors in Atascadero.
The cars you want, the people you like.
Serving you for 49 consecutive years.
Just plain good deals without the hype.
10 Miles Motors, same location since 1975.
Selling cars the way it should be done and giving you service that's second to none.
Driven to be the best.
10 Miles Motors, in business for 49 years, has sold over 13,000 vehicles and is the longest established used car dealer in San Luis Obispo County. So whether buying or selling a car, truck, van, SUV, motorhome, or classic car, visit their easy-to-navigate website, TedMilesMotors.com, or their showroom, 7380 El Camino Real in Atascadero, next to Farrell's Auto Repair.
Driven to be the best!
10 Miles Motors, Atascadero.
Welcome back to Protecting What Matters. We're visiting with Jenny Grinninger, trustee of the Templeton Unified School Districts. Next week's show will feature Mike Brown from CoLab, and then we have Debbie Arnold and Heather Moreno coming in, and we're going to be talking about the transition and Debbie's farewell, not to the show, because I'm sure she'll be on many more times in the future. So Jenny, let's wrap up on Moms for Liberty. How can people get active and more involved here locally?
Yeah, you can go to Moms for Liberty, and four is spelled out F-O-R, not the number four, momsforliberty.org. And there's a map that you'll see of this United States, and you go to California, you find our county, and that will tell you how to connect with us locally. And it's very easy to get involved. You can sign up for the newsletter. You can email us, and you can come to a meeting. You can start coming to school board meetings. We welcome all of that activity.
All right. So let's do a lightning round of state-level initiatives and mandates and so on and so forth. You got state budget cuts coming down. How do you see that impacting the schools in general and Templeton specifically?
Yeah. The budget cuts were not as severe as we were expecting, but it's still pretty difficult. And what I'll say is that 3 years ago, California had a $100 billion surplus, okay? And we listened over the last year as they grappled around with the actual number. It was as high as $73 billion was going to be the deficit. It ended up being $46.8 billion deficit. They cut $16 billion from that budget. And back in 88 and 89, we had Prop 98 that was passed, which was a constitutional amendment that guarantees minimal funding for schools based upon a variety of factors, two of which are per capita personal income and school attendance. That constitutional amendment, Prop 98, allowed for a suspension of the guarantee when conditions require it. And that is what they're doing. They're not guaranteeing that minimal amount. And so I don't have the figure in my head exactly how much Templeton should have gotten, what we are getting. But we did have to make budget cuts last year. I think we made about $1.5 million in cuts, and we'll likely need to make more. So we're still waiting to see what those figures look like.
Okay. And there's a whole bunch of other top-down issues that the state is mandating, requiring the schools to do. And you mentioned some of them last week when we talked. We talked about restorative justice. But, you know, what did you mean by removing governing boards? That was something that seemed a little disturbing.
Yeah, so we're reviewing our anti-bullying policy currently. And what I'll say is, you know, there's been a number of bills that the state has passed in the last year that is taking away local control. They did it with curriculum. They're doing it with these secrecy policies. We saw this law recently passed, 1955, which is very misconstrued, and a lot of people don't understand it. Even districts are not being given the correct information, and we're told that it prevents teachers from telling parents if their child is transitioning, and that's not entirely true. What it does is it restricts the school board from passing a policy that requires teachers to tell. They can tell, but we can't make them tell. And then, of course, you have Ed Code, which puts parents' rights very much at the forefront, and our state constitution does as well. And so really a parent would have a pretty significant lawsuit that they would very likely win, and they have been winning in the state of California if those secrecy policies are enacted upon their child. But in our bullying policy, they're asking us to remove the word governing. The governing board recognizes it. Instead, it would just say the board. And so my antenna immediately goes up. It's like, with all these bills passing, why are they wanting to remove the word governing? And they don't ask us to remove it in other board policies, just this one. So why is that? And then they're also in the AR for that, the administrative regulation, they're asking us to change wording where it used to encourage an individual in cases of cyberbullying, if you knew that it was happening, if you have, if you've seen things on social media that is cyberbullying, that you're encouraged to print that, save it, alert a teacher. And now they're wanting us to change it to you shall do that, which is a legal term. It's a requirement. But it doesn't signify then what happens if you don't. And I think it's a bad way for us to go. Certainly we want kids to say something if they see something.
Right.
But to place that requirement on them and have it be legally required, I think is a problem.
And what about the whole issue of the school districts responding to criminal behavior or suspected of criminal behavior? That's another big one.
Yeah, they wanted us to remove the sentence that says that we would report incidents to the appropriate authorities, including law enforcement, of instances of criminal behavior. And it looks, you know, we're going to be discussing this board policy on Thursday. And so it looks like maybe there's already agreement that we're not going to remove that. And when I say they, I'm talking about the California School Board Association. That's where we get these guidelines from of what, you know, what laws have been in place that we need to now comply with and how does that change our board policies. But not all of them are because of a law. Sometimes it's just a recommendation. And so we have some latitude, and in this case we do. We're not removing that, thankfully, as far as I can tell. We'll see what the vote ends up being.
Well, we have many issues to continue discussing next time you come on Protecting What Matters, Jenny. Thank you so much for all your efforts and your insights. It's really helpful. Folks, we'll be back next week with more great guests and more talk. So have a great rest of this week. Take care and protect what matters.
Join us next Tuesday for Protect What Matters the Most with Barry Fisher. Send your questions and show topic ideas to barry@blazinbear.com. AM 1230 KPRL, 99.3 FM, KPRL.com, Paso Robles, Atascadero, Templeton.